Welcome to the Electric Theater.
Mr. John Reese.
What's up, clown? How are you, brother?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Are you in Iowa or are you in California?
I am in Des Moines, Iowa, most northern suburb called Johnston. So been here, basically was on tour, decided to end the tour by flying. We were overseas, Europe tour, flew into Los Angeles, then went to Vegas and decided to, you know, have a little vacation for about a week there. Then started getting wind of all this and bolted home, and then it all hit. So I've been home since then, since tour, which was, what, 50 days ago, 60 days ago, something like that.
Yeah. Did you guys end up canceling dates that you were on, or did you cancel forward?
It was a very strange situation because, you know me, I'm sort of aloof with like the reality of the news and all these sort of things. So I remember being in touching down in LA and talking to Corey Taylor, and he was telling me that Japan was at risk for, you know, our show. And I was like, what are we talking about here? You know, where's the memo? And then he explained it to me, and that's where I kind of learned about it mostly, was by him that day. And sure enough, you know, I started paying attention that night, and we canceled Japan, and then everything forward, you know. So
right.
There was Japan, there was a couple little shows, like bourbon whiskey shows, some one-off different kind of festivals. So, you know, 5-6 things. So just unfortunate, but what you have to do, you know what I mean?
Yep.
What about you? I mean, where were you and what was going on?
Man, it's this whole last year has been insane. You know, I closed my company in August of last year, and, you know, rebooted. You know, I had a few other things, a few other businesses and so forth that I was interested in. And so, you know, it's been, for me, it's been boom, you know, SGE, the issues last summer with ticket sales and so forth, and then leading into restarting a whole new, you know, way of moving forward. And then bam, the virus hit. So it's been interesting. I've been following it since like early January. So I've been like pretty well in the knowledge about what was coming and what's going on. I don't know. I have a fascination with natural disasters, whether it be a hurricane or a pandemic or a tornado. I just, for some reason, I've always been attracted to that. So, you know, when I was on Twitter in early to mid January, seeing all the craziness that was going on in China. And so, you know, On some ways, I was really well prepared because I kind of already went through my devastation and crash. And then other ways, it just, you know, it's prolonged the situation. But, you know, it is what it is, man. You got to move on with life. And, you know, it's like living a Chumbawamba song, you know.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I was thinking about, I was just thinking about like what we know together, you know, like from our past and just what we've experienced and like, what's the root of all of it? You know, like what are people like you and I, what have we been doing? What have we tried to accomplish? What things didn't pan out? What things did? What did we learn along the way? Cause I know we're wise, you know, I mean, I know I'm a completely different human being. You know, I turned 50 last September, and you know, I ask a lot of my friends who are over 50, I'm like, is 50 a thing? And they're like, it's not a thing, but you got to get through it. I'm like, so it's a thing, you know, like, so I was trying to think, you know, what's like, what is the truth behind the reality of like someone like you and I that we can adhere to what's happening like right now. And I was thinking, you know, you and I had a mutual friend, Sophia, and I used to go so everybody knows, like Sophia was a programming manager for a radio station. And I used to go into that radio station and I would sit with her to be schooled, basically, to learn as much as I could about the pie of rock and roll, we would call it. And you managed a band called Goldfinger, right?
Yep.
And what I'm trying to, like, express to, like, kids these days, like, things come back around. And they're not supposed to come back around, like, in a way that you expect. So what I'm getting at is, like, I would sit in her office and Goldfinger would send in just these items, like a care package for a new single. You know, we're coming into town. We're supporting this single. And it would be a package. There'd be a t-shirt. Could be flowers. Could be crazy stuff they came up with. And, you know, that would put smiles on her face and that would get her to listen to it. And it seems so primitive. I mean, it was my whole life back then. But it's, you know, I look at it now and it seems so primitive. But see, I feel like everything's going to move that way after this. You know, I feel like this is devastation beyond our comprehension because we're so used to the behavior that we're used to. But, you know, the earth is a very complex place that we could not all of us can learn all at once. But I just feel we'll get back to the primitive human stuff. I was talking to Dez yesterday from Double Driver, and he was telling me that in India, they let go hundreds of elephants into the natural, you know, habitat because there's no tourists to ride them. And he said he shed a tear. And I was thinking, that is a level underneath all this that, you know, we don't hear about, we won't know about. We are asphyxiated on the realities of the tragedies that can occur and that are coming our way. But there are levels, I believe, of humanity and everything that's going to kind of sort of move in a positive direction. I mean, do you feel that or?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'll address Sophia first. You know, I got a phone call. I was managing Goldfinger at the time. I'd been with Guns N' Roses and Stone Roses. So in the early 90s, I was a manager. I was out with Guns N' Roses. It pretty much like enveloped my life. You know, they were the biggest band in the world and we played stadiums all over the world and they were just, it was private jets and craziness. And then I had to get a day job and I started managing a bunch of bands and, you know, worked with the Stone Roses, worked with Danzig, you know, right after Mother and, you know, all his insanity. And then I started in 1994, I think, Ross Robinson showed up at my office and it was the fucking craziest thing, man. I was meeting with Terry B from a band called Manhole, who made some noise in the UK, but never really made a lot of noise in the United States. And she said, I've got this guy and he's a badass and he's amazing and you got to meet with him. So she brought him to my office in LA and we met. And he said, I'm doing my first real album and I need to make a deal with that album. Oh, and by the way, you know, I'm living in a dude's garage. I got a boot on my car. Can I borrow a little bit of money? So I loaned him a little bit of money. And that first band that he was working on was Korn. And it was Korn's first album. Made the deal for him. And it pretty much after that, it just was a rocket shot for Ross. You know, we involved in Lip Bizkit and with a number of core bands during that time in the whole scene. And then Sophia called me and said, I have this band that you've got to hear. They're amazing. Cause I'd worked with her with Goldfinger and she said, you represent Ross, right? And I said, yeah, I do. And I said, well, this is right up his alley. I mean, he's going to love this band. And I says, cool, send it to me. So I think it was Spit It Out. It was the first demo and you guys had sent it. And everything you said is exactly right. And one thing that I want to clarify too, Clown, is you know, your band's important. You're important. What your guys' message is important right now. And everything, it gives people hope. It gives people, you know, you have the opportunity to touch people and to, you know, and never lose sight of the fact that that you get you guys get people through bullshit and through trauma and everything, and that's the beauty of art. And there's nothing more beautiful than art and music. And I just so respect the fact that for 23 years now, you've stood the test of time, you stood your ground, you've kept your integrity throughout the whole process. I just wanted to throw that out there. But anyway, back to Sophia. So she
thank
sends
you very
me
much,
the demo.
By the way, thank you.
Oh, all good, brother. So she sends me the demo. I play it for Ross. Ross is like, "Fuck, that's cool." And we're like, we're looking for something different and badass. And so we're like, "Fuck it." I think I called you and got on the phone with Ross. I don't remember the exact specifics, but we decided to book a trip to Des Moines. And it was in the middle of the fucking winter, and it was dreary as hell. And we went to your house. And we hung out, I remember, and then we went downstairs and we saw a rehearsal. And, you know, two bars into, I don't remember the song you guys played, but the very first song you guys played in your basement with Ross and I looked at him two bars in and I'm like, holy fucking shit. Just the percussive bombastness of Slipknot and the overall power. Then you had a gig the next night at some small, you know, 600 person club. I don't remember the exact capacity, but we went to that. And to this day, it was the most violent show I'd ever seen. And there were all these fucking record label executives there and so forth. And Ross, you know, and I just saw it and felt it and knew it and just felt it. And we went to dinner that night, I remember, and Ross spent time with you and spent time with Joey. And we ended up, you know, we had our deal with Roadrunner, and we ended up, you know, talking to Monty and Case and all of them, and signed Slipknot to our imprint through Roadrunner. And, you know, the rest is history. And we knew that two bars into that first rehearsal that you guys were going to change the world. And, you know, it's just been an honor to be involved, you know, in the very first Knotfest and everything that, you know, it's just like you called it, man. It's full circle in life. It's full circle in everything. And for me, all the other bullshit, and I think I feel a lot the way, you know, you and I have spent enough time together, clown, and it ain't about the bullshit. It ain't about all the other bullshit. It's about touching kids and moving kids. And that, to me, I've always known that's what your primary priority was in this band. And I just have I harbor a tremendous amount of respect for you and your band as a human being, with keeping it going through tragedy, through death, through all the shit you've dealt with. And you've kept the core, the purity of Slipknot real.
Well, I really appreciate that. It's really, pardon me. It's definitely, you know, especially right now, I haven't done very much. Like, I'll share some with you. Today I got up, and every morning that I get up and I get coffee, I'll go to my Instagram account, and I noticed that I dropped 1,000. And my gut instinct was, and I don't care about numbers, but why I look is because I care about my culture. And this is the very first time I remember it dropping. And instantly I knew that my culture is upset with me for not being proactive on saying, "Hey, is everybody okay? Is everybody all right?" You know, and I know this, and I'm feeling that tension. But the reason is you know, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. Everybody's doing what they have to do. We all have to learn this at the same time. You know me. I have my own insight on how I probably feel that this has to happen. You know, and so this morning when I saw I dropped, I knew that I better get off my butt and say hello to all my friends and our culture, you know? And, I'm going to speak and be proactive when I know it's real from my heart, when I can actually mean it, be there. And it's been coming. So I appreciate that. It is important. You know, there wouldn't be a day of my career if it wasn't for all these wonderful human beings that need what I call, you know, I guess the release. You know what I mean? We all need we all need that music to help us with just about everything we go through. So I'm really blessed to have been able to discover music in my life and had it be my everyday thing. At, you know, like with you, you were saying earlier, I mean, I think you've always been at the root and the center of the cultures, you know, like I've always found it fascinating that there's always people involved with a festival, a rock show, ongoing touring festival, whatever it is. There are so many people that are important behind the scenes that don't feel like they need to be at the forefront or feel like they need to use the word I or me. And you're one of those people that, like, so many people really had to be relying on you in order to have all these awesome festivals you've done and all these awesome things, from Guns N' Roses to Slipknot to all of it. I mean, you're absolutely right, man. The culture, the kids, it can be confusing. I've lost my way several times with normal stuff. Could be chemicals, could be deaths, could be just obscure things thrown my way. And you have to search yourself and you have to find yourself. But in the end, really, you know, the only thing that's bumming me out about all this is that it's going to keep me from my friends. You know what I mean? And that's how serious the pandemic is to me, because I'm like, wow, you know, I have a lot of friends in Mexico, you know, in Mexico City. I have a lot of friends down there. And in South America, I just keep making more and more friends there. And I'm like, wow, the reality is there's a pretty good chance some of these people I'm not going to see for a very, very, very long time. And it makes me think of our culture. It makes me think of what you've done and what I've done and how important, you know, being behind the barricade where we are and looking out and seeing a lot of happy faces because they're being fed what they need to get through the rest of their month, the rest of their year, until we come back or until others do. So it's weird, you know. It is a priority, and I'm feeling it.
Yeah. And I did a little thing about right when we started in mid-March. I did a little thing called Who Remembers This? And it just walked through, you know, we created 55 different festival brands in since 2004. And I kind of just walked back, and I started in 2004 with The Cure and the Curiosa Festival. And then I went to Taste of Chaos and Mayhem and had been walking through the memories and the good memories of everybody being together and so forth. And I think it's helped people, and people get to post their own memories. And that's just been my little thing of, you know, looking back over when we could all, you know, fellowship and hang out together and do these kind of things. I mean, look, this is nature, man. This is a virus. Okay. There's all the politics and all that other bullshit. It's all really kind of meaningless, because at the end of the day, the virus is going to do what the virus is going to do with whatever the government agencies or the mitigations or the, you know, the containments and so forth they can do. And different countries have chosen different mitigation strategies. You know, the United States now has decided that we're just going to let everybody get sick and we'll figure it out as we go. Is that a great strategy? Who the fuck knows? We don't know. We don't know if a million people are going to die or 200,000 people are going to die. But ultimately, that's what this, and each country, like China, is a, you know, the CPP, the central government that controls everything and controls, and they're all about social order and all these kind of things. That's not the way the West works, not the way this country. It's obvious that Italy is going to have a major problem because of the way that they communicate. You know, they hug each other, they kiss each other. There's spread of disease, you know, whereas all the Asian countries are in a mask or staying away from each other. It's natural. It's nature. So it's crazy. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, who knows when we're going to be able to gather together again in mass, in large numbers to celebrate and to celebrate the most important art form in the world, which is music. And, you know, it's a scary but an interesting time. And I think that, you know, it's about keeping your wits and staying and supporting, especially for you, because, you know, I don't mean to say this weird clown, but it's like, you know, Charles Barkley was like, I'm not really a role model. Yeah, and clown, you're not really a role model, but there's a lot of people that that gain strength from your music and gain strength from your message. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the things that you said that you did this morning, I think are important. I think it's important. I think there's kids all over the world saying, you know, what does Slipknot think about all this? And at the end of the day, it's up to you to respond how you want to respond, but just showing that you care, I think, is important.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I feel it, and it's a humbling feeling, and you're right, because it's going to be very strange if I see you on a festival setting, and you're wearing a mask, potentially gloves, you're hooked up, because we have to be, and I have to be, and then we got to look at each other, and we got to decide how we got to be, because for our whole life, it's been nothing but hugs and love, and it is going to change our world. But let me ask you this. Take an intense festival that you've done, you know, any festival that you did. Imagine you're out there in your golf cart, you're out rolling around, you're checking on all the areas, you're checking out all the people. It's an A market. You've been there before. You have lots of friends. You recognize faces. You're saying hello to people. You're hugging people. You're around people. You're sharing beverages with people. So what I'm getting at is, people like us, we're pirates. And when we go out on the road, we don't have time to get sick. We've been to Japan, where we've seen people that are getting ill. They'll start by wearing a mask to prevent anybody else. We've seen this 20 years ago. So you and I, we go out to a festival. We're working. We're shaking hands, meet and greets. We're doing all this. I can recall being on a very intense, weather-intensive European tour, people sick, runny noses, colds, flus, and I don't have time to get sick, and psychologically, I will just innately do the things I need to do to survive without thinking influenza, the flu, or pneumonia, any of these weird things are going to get me. I will just operate on a real human level without giving too much praise to it. And I will get through a whole tour without remotely getting sick. Can you say you've done that? Like, been in a festival with sweaty, sick people and got out the other side? Not even a cold. That's happened, right, for you?
No, sure.
So I look at it that way. I mean, life, you're right. It's a living, breathing thing, this virus. It's not going to go away. It's a thing. So
it has one job. A virus has one job. It's the most simplest life form. Its job is to find a host and then duplicate. That's all. Its only job. So it doesn't think. It doesn't understand borders. It doesn't understand any boundaries. So the question remains, and I'm not trying to, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think the question remains is the virility or the strength and the transmissibility and the deadliness of the virus, which I don't think we know right now, you know, so it may just be the common cold, but we don't know. And so ultimately the problem is, and everybody says, oh, the flu and this, it's novel. So it adds additional strains to the medical system, to governments, to everything else. So it's something that we don't know about. Why is it? Oh, why are we so worried about this? Because it's novel, because it adds additional strain to heart disease, to the flu, to this, to that. So that's
right.
the importance of figuring it out. And then on top of that, it does kill people. We don't know if we don't know if the CFR is 3.5% or 0.4%. We don't know at this point. All we know is the fucking hospitals in New York were fucked. The hospitals in Italy were screwed. The hospitals in China were screwed. The hospital, you know, that's what it is. So, you know, it's as I've said, at the end of the day, it's all about the pathogen. It's really how powerful is this pathogen and how transmissible is it?
Right. It's Dez brought up another thing. He was saying that some scientists and people he had an exact name of someone that was saying we in the future are going to refer to before the pandemic. You know, we're going to refer to like the Depression or World War II or you know, something like that. And that, you know, there's so many levels of life here that are being learned, you know, and I like how you say it doesn't understand money and politics. And that's exactly why I'm taking my time to try and figure out how to support the world and the culture and my world and all that, because, you know, I don't care about the money and I don't care about the politics, because this is real. You know, this is, I have friends who potentially won't have diaper money. That's disturbing.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
I don't want to think about that. I already have a problem with the homeless situation. Most of us ignore it all day long. And now what are we going to do with it when it's on this level? You know, someone in Des Moines last week brought up the prison system and was telling me what's going on in my local prison with the outbreak. And I was just like, I don't know if my brain can handle that level of humanity, like the levels that we don't hear about, you know. But to be positive, there's a lot of beautiful positive things, you know, things clean up, I don't know, you know, family time, all kinds of things that, you know, that are positive. So I just try to, one thing I'm loving is reconnecting with friends and just trying to, you know, I guess have conversations. So it's, you know, it's just cool to, and I learned, that's my biggest thing is when I do this with, you know, my friends and just people I don't know or whatever, I learn so much that I need to, in order to continue our paths, you know? So what do you have going on? I mean, what's happening?
I feel the same way that you feel at the end of the day. I think that the one thing that this pandemic has done for humanity is it's allowed families to understand what's important. I mean, I spent 4 hours two nights ago with my daughters listening to music and picking a song. We would never do that before. Just the time got to spend with loved ones, I think, is really important. And then the chance to just like take a deep breath and moving forward with life. And I think there's a substantial, you know, sustainability aspect and health aspect to coming out of this, and the earth and the planet and nature and killing animals, you know. Here's my reality in this, and they can talk about the fucking Wuhan lab all they want and so forth. But the reality is this: a bat dropped a food item or took a shit, another animal it came involved with that, and then that animal was taken to a wet market in Wuhan, China, and was slaughtered. An animal that is a wild animal, and then that virus hit one person. So whether it came from the Wuhan lab the same way or not, the reality is sometime in late November, sometime in early December, one person was affected and now millions are infected. And this is nature. Call it culling the herd, call it what you want. You know, this is nature saying that I'm in charge. And I think man's dominion, and this is just my opinion, you know, I think man's overall dominion and attempts at dominion through religion and through all the stuff of this planet, the smallest of microbes can fucking change our destiny. So it's important to understand how to deal with the planet, how to deal with each other. You know, the fact that this is killing people that are obese and that have morbidities and have diseases. I mean, it's nature saying that, you know, hey, humanity, here's a little who's in charge, you know. So what does that do to us? I think it opens up like kind of what you said is, you know, we're just another living thing on this planet, just like a chimpanzee, just like a whale, just like a fly. And we're, you know, nature's telling us, hey, man, hey, humans, this is me. I'm in charge of this shit. So anyway.
It could be, you know, I'm not trying to like poke fun at it, you know, the virus or anything, but I mean, it could be Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. You know, like it could be a whole other thing, you know, and then, but you know, when you watch that and you check that out, just the moral of it is like they drank our water and our organisms, our viruses, our organisms that are in our water kills them, you know. So I just try to sit here and think somehow, some way humans, you're right. I mean, we're not smart. I always say it. We're not smart. We think we are. We think we got these structures and, you know, really a hypothesis is 10 years or whatever. I mean, we don't know anything. We've been alive for a long, long time. We still don't know anything, I believe. So, but I do have hope, like a dandelion weed, that we ourselves, you know, we're going to survive and find the way, because You're right. It's nature. This is nature. This is the reality of the reality we're in. This isn't the freeway. This isn't a basement. This isn't cable TV. This is the real deal life. So, but life finds a way, you know, and I think since we're at the top, supposedly, you know, hopefully we'll have enough smarts to just get through it. Again, I'm learning more about it just by talking to you. I've heard a lot about the bat thing and whatever, but you hear this and that, some of it I can't put together in my brain and understand. There's so many people talking over each other, you know, to get it out. It's hard to, you know, decipher what's really going on.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's really just to, from the stress level and everything else, it's pretty simple. It's a pathogen, and then it's the response of the human community to deal with the pathogen. And then it does what it does. So if the pathogen is a bitch and it's gnarly as hell, then we're going to have a rough time. If it's not, we'll get a vaccine. 12 to 18 months from now, we'll start coming back. In the meantime, before there's a vaccine, a lot of people are going to get sick, and it's going to be dependent upon each country to deal with it, how they deal with it. Are we going to have big concerts this year? I don't know. I don't think so, but we'll see, you know, but when we come back together, it's going to be a beautiful thing. And I think it'll be more spiritual and more righteous. And I think we'll appreciate, that's the one big thing. Is I think that these magical moments, be it a Slipknot show in Mexico City or Knotfest in Southern California, I think when people go to those things, there's going to be a much greater appreciation for the spiritual and soulful movement of what it is. And I
agree with you. I've foreseen this. So in my reality, I have foreseen, like, I've had this glimpse into the future where I've seen Corey Taylor, after three songs, we take a break, we come back, he's going to acknowledge the crowd with a hello and this sort of thing. I've seen him break down into tears because of the emotion in front of him. It's a different emotion than just, awesome, it's Friday night, you're here, we're here, we've been waiting, it's on, play this song, I'm going to fucking hurt myself, you know? I've seen this. I have seen that we know as a band, we need you, and you know you need us. But it's on a different level. It's not a monetary aspect. It's not a within the lines aspect. It's not rules. It's not laws. It's a human spiritual thing that's happening. So not to cut you off, but I absolutely agree with you that this human appreciation, because it's happening. None of us can deny that we're hanging with family, that we're going inwards. And what's important is that we're noticing the things that we're doing that we didn't do. I'm hearing everyone say, I never would have done that, and I'm doing it.
Yeah.
That is priceless. That's priceless. I guarantee you when this all pans out, when and how, people are going to miss the time they have that they were able to acquire by repetition, by every day getting up and going.
They're missing it now. They're missing it now.
Yeah.
So,
Look, I don't want to suck your dick here, but I'm going to suck it a little bit. You know, there's a lot of people that start bands for a lot of reasons. And in 1996 or 97, I don't know the exact date, but at least when I first experienced Slipknot and what Slipknot meant and what your overriding just passion for the experience of the band and what they meant and the purity of message, you know, that you haven't changed. And that's 23 years of that. And that's, you know, it's rare. It's very rare. And you've gone through, I think we touched on this earlier. I mean, you've gone through a lot of fucking heartbreak and a lot of, you know, a lot of shit, and you've kept it going. And I think, you know, it goes back to the same point I made earlier. I think that the kids, you know, the 50 million Slipknot fans all over the world need you right now more than ever, I think, because of the shit that's going on. They're confused. You know, I have a 17-year-old daughter. She's confused.
I have a 16-year-old, and I'm trying to address this somehow, is that he is very confused and almost laughs it off because, you know, he's young. And it's hard for, you know, younger minds to adhere to that preaching of the older generation. You know, mow the lawn, trim the yard, you know, screw you. So now it's like, you can't go, you can't do that, blah, blah, blah. He's 16. But it's the fact that he kind of smiles it off a little bit. And I try to tell him, hey, man, this has never happened on the earth because I've never experienced anything like this. I don't know what's going on. I can't right. give you wisdom. I can't tell you when it's going to end. I can tell you what I know. I can tell you what I feel. I can tell you what I want. But in all reality, I don't know. This is brand new. So I feel it's sort of heartbreaking because it's like, God, I want to be there I want to be there for guidance, but I need guidance as well. So anyway, it is very important. I appreciate you very much reminding me of responsibilities because, man, I've been feeling it lately. I'm like, I don't want to say why I'm not doing things, you know, but a lot of it has to do with the urgency of human beings think they need to do things immediately. And what happens is I'm just very biased and maybe maybe I'm a real jerk or asshole towards like art and expression. Maybe that's my problem. I don't know, but I just feel like I have to go more inward. So I say it right. And just as talking to you, I see it more. I see more what I can do. And that's the point of what I'm doing now. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to, yeah. I'm trying to offer more of myself, but get with my friends and learn and, you know, there's really no agenda here other than like to talk, to be human and kind of do what we don't get to do. And so that's what I'm trying to levitate me into trying to do as much as I can. But man, it is important. And the more and more I think about it, it's like, wow, there are a lot. I follow a lot of my fans on Instagram and I can see it in their words. You know, they go up and down in moods. You know, I follow a couple people that don't even know I follow maybe, and I just watch from outside and I see them one day, they're like, they'll do something with their hair or they'll plant a vegetable. But then the next time they're referring songs that are very aggressive and thought processes that are very, very sort of isolated and could be depressing. You need these things to get you through, but they're showing what they're going through. Like I'm hurting today. So, it's heavy duty right now, isn't it? It is really on another level.
Well, and look, you're a working class band, you know. You know, I'm not saying that you don't have rich fans. You probably have a ton of rich fans, but you know, you have a lot of working class fans too, and they're struggling right now. The macroeconomic you know, outlook for this is tough. You know, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, it's social distancing, you know, let's just talk about Las Vegas for one second. You know, Las Vegas has been closed since the middle of March and they want to reopen Las Vegas. And that's fantastic. They should reopen Las Vegas. But, you know, any of these businesses, they all run at, you know, the profit margins are on the last 12 to 15%. The profit margins aren't in the 60%. So if they can open it 50% of capacity, it's almost like they're burning more money and more than, it's almost worse than good. So it's going to be a challenge and it's going to be a challenge to figure this out. And again, it goes back to how dangerous the pathogen is. Is it that dangerous? You know, and we're going to find out because ultimately I think the United States in the past few days has decided to like throw in the towel and let it go and let's reach herd immunity. And, you know, Sweden's on the same kind of step. And I mean, there's various countries that have handled this differently. The Asian countries, Australia, New Zealand, there's zero cases in Australia, New Zealand. There's Asia's got it pretty much under control. The West, Europe and the United States, we're fucked, you know, and we'll see. And it's just going to depend on the pathogen. And, you know, look, I think that this is also a time of opportunity. I think during very difficult times, some of the greatest, you know, during the plague, you know, the Italian Renaissance, you know, some of the greatest art of all time, some of the greatest companies of all time have all been created during times of absolute despair. And so, you know, who knows what that means? Does that mean Slipknot writes has the inspiration to do something different too? Who knows? You know, it's all about us and how we deal with this. Each individual, you can have you can have my year and how fucking shitty it's been and so forth, and then still be positive. Or you can have my year and decide to put a fucking bullet into your head. You know, it's up to the human being to deal with whatever he's dealing with and then come out the other side. You know, it's a fucking Chumbawamba song, man. I get knocked down and I get up again.
I mean, it's true, man. I've pondered the idea of purchasing or trying to purchase a giant acreage of hundreds of acres and then just say, you're going to have to come to me and we'll make it happen. And to come to me, you're going to have to prove you're not ill and we'll just make it happen together. You know, I don't know, but.
Dude, I don't know if I should say this on the podcast, but I got a venue where you could do a drive-in show. It would be unbelievable. We'll talk offline about that.
No, but of course, I mean, that's a little bit, John, that's a little bit of what I was speaking right from the beginning, is that there are old school philosophies that were reality. Okay, for instance, like right now I'm talking to you on a landline. So this brand new invention called a phone line comes into your house, connects to like this thing, and I have this phone. It's a cordless phone, and it works. I can hear you. There's no Wi-Fi problems. It's a direct connect. I haven't had a phone line for over 15, 16 years because I've had a cell phone.
Right.
You know? And what I'm saying is we humans, we always come back, just like 2-inch tape with recording. They always say, oh, it's out. No, it's not. People still use it. Okay? Guess what? Drive-in theaters, you know, bonfires. There's all kinds of things that humans had to do where 3 to 6 foot was in between people. So, wonderful things. Things that encompass food, culture, music, all of that. You know, I mean, we've come from the primitiveness. We're going to go back to it. You know, that's why I was saying the elephants are being released. They used to be in their habitat, got taken, now they're being brought back. Who would have guessed? Who would have known? Who could have bet on that in Vegas? Nobody.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, and look at the air and look at the cities where wildlife, you know, when human activity is slowed down and animal activity all throughout the world, the air in Los Angeles, just all of it, all of the effects that human beings have on the planet, and poof, in a moment it can change because of the smallest thing, and then poof, it can change again. It's crazy to me. And then you add the, you know, I don't want to get into politics, but you add the whole the politics aspect of this, and then it becomes all about politics and not about human beings, and that's the trippy thing.
Unfortunately, John, we would all be lying to ourselves if we didn't just ultimately admit that there's an agenda of ourselves. I mean, as you and I, you can break it down into the simplest form of what it is and say, hey, put your money on it, put your religion on it, put your land on it, do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. This is a real thing, and it's this simple. And you're right. I think you and I can both look at it not in the conspiracy way, but if anyone thinks for a minute there's not always an agenda on everything, that's how we work. That's what we do. We can prove that. And so there are a million things awry in the solar system now caused by us that are under layers that are not right, that are not truthful. And if we didn't acknowledge that, we'd be dumb, right? But I think the simple fact that you bring up is what's going to align all that. And it is aligning it because, like you said, the air is better, the water is better, the animals are better, things are better in like a grand scheme. They're not better in our minds because we can't go to work. Well, you know, the air is better. It's interesting. You know, it's very interesting what's happening right now, and the negative and the positive. It's like, wow, big time on both, right? So,
yep.
Again, is the family, everybody's good? Everybody close?
Everybody. We've had a difficult 4 days. My wife's was rushed to an ambulance on Saturday night, and she had a major asthma attack, and it's been touch and go on Sunday, and she's getting better now. So it's just been a rough year, dude. It's been a rough year for everybody. And it's at the end of the day, you just got to be positive and stay with it. And, you know, those close to you, like you are to me, you know, clown, that ability to communicate and to share, I think is so vital right now. And I'm so glad that you're doing this, that you're talking to people in this perspective. And, you know, who knows with Slipknot, maybe you go and start in 1997 and you start showing videos from 97 all the way through so people can relive their experience. That's what people want right now, is to look back at what the normal used to be and what the normal can be, and just all to stay positive and to stay strong, you know?
I agree with you. I think that's excellent advice and a good direction for me. I always search, man. I go everywhere. I look at everybody. I feel everybody out. I listen to our community. I do whatever, and I just try to find my place in the pool of life. So I'm trying to circle around with everyone because it's important. It's important to me what you've done. You know, a lot of people, they're going to find out by listening to this who you are, these things, just by putting together what we've done. And that's really the point. You know, I'm not pointing the finger and trying to spell everything out, but it's important to me as a human, everything you've done for all of us, because I've been there watching the other bands, walking around the fans, taking photos, eating slushies, you know, eating hot wings and living my community for the last 20 years. And as of 60 days ago or whatever, you know, I was told amongst, so was everyone else, you know, that, you know, we couldn't go share some time, an hour and a half with friends in a different country. And that's really heartbreaking. So, it's time to maybe reflect.
Dude,
I like that.
Dude, I've been around thousands of artists. I've sold, you know, probably 100 million tickets in my career. I've created 55 different festivals. And I'll tell you one thing, you and I, on that cornfield in Council Bluffs, Iowa, 2013, I think, the very first Knotfest, and you out there from 7 o'clock in the morning until right when doors hit, building that Slipknot Museum, trying to build something, you know, putting the fire where the fire goes, just all of the heart shit that went into putting a presentation on together for your fans, and just the passion that you displayed through that whole process of that whole Knotfest run that we did together, whether it was Ozfest, Knotfest with 90,000 people. That was you, dude. That was you and, you know, you and Corey and me and John Fenton. And, you know, we threw the biggest metal festival in the history of America. And just all of the ideas. I mean, we blew through 20,000 fucking gallons of propane, for God's sakes. Our sponsor was AmeriGas.
That's probably one of my favorite experiences, is sitting there with you, you explaining to me who those people were, how you found them, why they're doing what they're doing, and then would you like to see an example, and then basically having my face blown off from like 50 yards, man. Like, and then I'm thinking, okay, that's it. That's the best thing I've ever seen in my life. Then the guy who's running it is telling me sort of like, I don't really know the politics of it or whatever, but he was more or less letting me know that, like, it was a good thing to blow off the fire and how he was getting the gas. And there was a lot of positive attributes. But then the best part of it is literally being on stage and that gentleman and his team blasting all that equipment during some of our songs, mimicking our rhythms, or
yep.
them them sharing how they feel the music is to them and blasting that fire, we could feel it, you know? So those are some of the best memories of my life. And I'm glad that I share it with people that have vision, you know, because the politics and all the garbage that we all have to live with all the time and you know, just get through can be heart-wrenching. But in the end of the day, it's just all passion for all of us in the team. And you're right, man. We did something really special. And, yeah, man, so much love to you and your family. Give my love to your wife. I hope she recovers okay.
Thanks, buddy.
From that attack. Please extend, you know, the family's love to your family and say hello to your wonderful daughter for me. And I'm going to see you out there, man, and let me know if you need anything or let me know.
You got it, brother.
Let me know if you got any ideas, and we'll put some together. So be safe.
You know I always do.
Yeah, do it. Bring it. I'm waiting okay. for it. It always happens, and it's going to continue to happen. Our paths, it's the way it goes. But much love.
I love it.
Be good. Be safe. Thank you for doing this, and thank you for shedding light on all kinds of scenarios in my head. Thank you.
Love you, brother. Peace to you. Love to your family. Love to everybody that surrounds the Slipknot family, brother.